Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Everyone, and welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. And today I have another special guest because we're continuing our series on areas of work that I don't know very much about. So, hi, welcome to the podcast. Maybe you'd like to start by just saying who you are and something about what you do and your connection with languages.
Hello, Kirsty. Thank you for having me here. My name is Rita Menezes. I'm a Portuguese translator and subtitler. I've been working in this industry for over 20 years now. And more recently, I've been involved also in translators training and in research. Today I call myself a practice searcher, someone who practices and who also researches or practice. I work mainly in subtitling and transcreation and doing both translation and revision and quality control. And that's it.
So how did you get interested in this area of work? So was you interested in languages from a young age, or is it something you kind of moved into while you were studying something else?
I became interested from a young age, back in high school. I had a subject which was called translation techniques, English translation techniques, and I was fascinated with the subject, and I thought, oh my god, I want to be a translator, because back then I had no idea what a translator was. So I decided then that I want to pursue a career in translation, and I decided to take a degree. My BA is in translation, actually. So it was from a very early age.
Okay, but then you moved from translation specifically into subtitling. So what was it about this area that you found particularly interesting? Or
In my degree, in my last year of my degree, I had a subject called translation technologies. And I experimented with several technologies associated with translation. I experimented back then on technical translation using CAT tools, which are tools that help technical translators provide the more consistent and coherent job. And I also had part of that semester was dedicated to subtitling. So it was great to be able to actually do subtitling while I was finishing my degree, because I thought it was amazing, full of technicalities, but still amazing. And that's when I thought that would be great if I could do subtitling for a living. And then from there, I started looking for subtitling jobs and applied for subtitling jobs until I got one.
And that's how you find out if you like something. It's not just a theory, it's actually doing the thing. And then you find out whether it's as enjoyable as you think it will be. And if it is, then you can decide you want to do more of it.
Yes, yes. I consider myself a fortunate one, because I had a chance to try different areas of translation before I got into business, let's say, before I start working professionally. So I was very fortunate, and I was able to pick the translation jobs that I was more fond of. So it was wonderful.
Hey,
I was a lucky one.
Sometimes you kind of, you know, make it though for yourself. If you go and ask the right people, ask enough people, then you can find the opportunities that that are out there for you. And what about within subtitling itself though? Because it's very different, the different types of material that you can be working with. What are your favorites? And is there anything that you really don't enjoy doing? So like what's the best and the worst of subtitling jobs for you?
Well, I could talk about genres. I have my favorite ones. For example, I enjoy working in films, and because they tend to be relatively short projects, and I can easily move from one to another. And also I enjoy working on documentaries because I'm forced to do some research always. And it's a way of learning more about things, society issues, history marks and so documentaries are really fun for me because of the research part.
You
Also,
learn
I
as well.
enjoy. Sorry, Christy.
You learn as well. You learn something new at the same time.
I learn as well, yes. Then I enjoy translating and subtitling children content because we need to be very careful in the way we choose words, in the way we combine the words, because they have to be meaningful, and at the same time we need to pay attention to the reading speed, because we cannot use as many words as we use in adult content, because children of a certain age are still learning to read or are not very quick readers, so we have to have that in mind. And I also enjoy working on SDH, subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing, because it's really hard work also, because there's a lot of subtitles, a lot of text, but also a lot of meaningful information that could be very useful for the deaf and hard of hearing community. So I really enjoy working in those kind of projects.
So that's also the kind of like, I don't know, a dog was barking or a certain type of music was like the things that you can't hear, but that would add some value to what's going on.
Yes. When we work on subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing, apart from the dialogues that need to be subtitled, we have to include all the information that is audible to make sure the audience has all the necessary info to decode and to grasp the message. So we need to add the audio cues. We need to add text informing of any sound effects that we hear and the type of music that we hear, and also sometimes the tone of voice, which is very relevant. And all those, that kind of info is really necessary and useful. So that's what makes SDH different from other types of subtitling.
I guess you need to write more then. It takes a bit longer and you need to write more, but I'm more familiar with the other way around, like audio description, but that definitely does make a difference to whether somebody can enjoy the film or not. So like that it makes a difference for them, and it means that they can fully participate in the experience.
Mm-hmm. And it is accessible for everyone, either with subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing or audio description. It's useful not only for those who really need it, but for everyone else, because we all could benefit from the extra information that is provided, and we could all learn a bit more with the information that is provided.
Know a bit more about what's going on, or consume the content, I don't know, with the sound off, or while you're doing something else and not watching So it helps more people than it's important to make it accessible, but it also helps a lot more people than it's intended to, because, you know, we can all use these aspects.
Yes, we could all learn. For example, with audio description, the describer might be using, for example, technical terms or explaining the way things are being filmed, and might be explaining some movements with the camera, and the might be describing a picture. For example, you see a picture in the image and you recognize it, but you don't know who painted it. The other describer might include that info, and that would be beneficial for you also, for example.
Yeah, we can all learn something new. And I think especially with language learners, because a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are learning either English or another language, I think they rely a lot on subtitles too. Is this something that you've done in the past for language learning, or not so much?
Yes. Yes. When I'm abroad, I enjoy watching TV from the country I'm in, and I usually select the subtitles or the captions, and I tend to follow what is being said and what is written to see if I can understand the language. Sometimes I cannot, but it's still very fun to follow the film, the series, the news, whatever, with the subtitles. And also, sometimes I watch English content with the English subtitles on, because even though I understand English, there are some accents which are more difficult for me, and there are some words that can be said differently or very quickly. And I find that the English subtitles are really helpful to that. I can match the sound with the text, so it's very nice for me to be able to hear and to read the words, the sentences, and learn more vocabulary that way. So yes, I still learn. I still use subtitles as a learning tool also.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, because when people talk about subtitles, they sometimes forget that you have these two options if it's the information is available in another language, because sometimes people like put subtitles on in German and listen to content in English. That doesn't help so much in terms of learning English, because then you start reading, and I'm physically not able to do that. So I don't know how helpful it is, but I think if you rely on them too much, that isn't always good. But if you are at least looking at the subtitles in the language that you want to learn, then you are reading as well, but you are not just getting an immediate summary of what's going on. So that can actually be more helpful. If you're gonna use the subtitles, then use them in the language that you're trying to learn if you can, because then you will at least see how the words are written, and you can match them up to the sounds that you're listening to.
Yes, but the other way around is also beneficial. I'm a huge fan of subtitles, because if you use them in the, let's say the content is in English and the subtitles are in English, they are very, very useful if you're trying to learn a foreign language. Well, that's not a good example, because English is not a foreign language for you. Let's use another language. So let's say the content is in Spanish, and the subtitles are in Spanish, and this option is very useful if you are trying to learn the foreign language, because you can hear it and read it in the context. You can check the spelling, check the grammar, check the vocabulary. So it's very useful. But the other way around is also useful. Let's say I'm watching a Spanish series with Portuguese subtitles. I can still listen to the language and train my listening skills also, and at the same time I can improve my Portuguese literacy, which is the target language, which is my mother tongue. So when I read something with the Portuguese subtitles on, I improve my literacy, and I'm also able to read hopefully text that is well written, which makes sense in terms of grammar. I can learn some vocabulary also. So either way, you win with the subtitles. That's what I think.
Yeah, okay. And I think it's also important for the people who are listening, because there are some misconceptions about, you know, what subtitles are. You've already talked about the reading speed, you know, for children and even for adults, there isn't space to write everything that is said. Maybe you could explain something about some of the rules or some of the restrictions that you have when you're subtitling, so that you, because it's not a transcript, like how do you, what do you have to be aware of when you're deciding what you're going to write?
Mm-hmm. So when we create subtitles, there are a lot of things that we need to juggle. There are a lot of constraints, and there are some rules that we need to follow. So sometimes it is very difficult to create meaningful and correct subtitles. So it seems easy, but it's not an easy task. There are many rules, and there are many expectations that govern subtitling. First of all, there are the grammar rules of the language that we need to apply, but at the same time, some of them are different because we are talking about a moving text and not a static text. So we need to pay attention, for example, to punctuation. Punctuation is slightly different than what is prescribed in grammar. So we need to think about the reader, the viewers, and the way they are reading the subtitles, because viewers are not only reading, they are viewing, of course. So we need to consider when we create the subtitles that their main goal is to watch the film and enjoy or learn something. And subtitles are there to help the viewer understanding better the dialogues. When we create the subtitles, there are several things that we have to consider besides the grammar and the grammar rules. We need to consider time and space because, as I said, subtitles appear briefly. We can read the subtitle depending on how much words there are in it. It is available to read for up to 7 seconds, generally. Then there's the space issue. We have a limited characters number per line, and usually we take up two lines, so one or two lines in the bottom of the screen. And viewer needs time to read, but at the same time, viewer needs to follow the image, because image also provides info. And it provides info not only for viewers, but also for us, subtitlers. Image is useful in terms of context, to provide context. And there are a lot of reference in the image that help us create coherence between the subtitles and those reference. For example, if you talk about a dress, if you look at an image, probably the dress is there and you can see the dress. So you immediately know what dress you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the soundtrack also provides relevant info, because we have the tone of voice, we have different accents, and at the same time we have music, we have sound effects that are that, and all this combined is what we call the film, right?
Mm-hmm.
And subtitles have to be easy to read, easy in the sense that they need to provide all the necessary info, but the viewer must be able to have enough time to read and then move on to the next subtitle. Also, the way we create the subtitles, the way we divide the text in chunks, has to be meaningful, so it makes the reading easier. And we also need to pay attention to other aspects like register, slang, dialects, if they are a characteristic of that character, of the someone in the screen, we need to respect that and include that in the way that people, that person talks, for example. And of course, there's always the linguistic accuracy. If we want subtitles to be a language model, we need to create them in a way that they are correct. Even if they are concise, they have to be correct. They have to pay attention to rules. They have to be easy to read. So, yes, it looks like an easy job. And some say that if subtitles go unnoticed, it means that they are good subtitles. What this means is that people are there to see the film. They do not want to be distracted by the subtitles.
Mm.
If they go unnoticed, they are not distracting. And if they are not distracting, it means they are correct. They are properly done. So they are fulfilling their purpose, which is helping the viewer. So it's a lovely job being a subtitler. It's so much fun. It's difficult. It's very difficult to create proper subtitles because we have to pay attention to so many things at the same time. But it's really fulfilling.
Yeah, you can tell that you really like your job, which is good, because like we spend so much of our time working. It's important to be doing something that we enjoy, but that we also feel is meaningful for others. And it sounds like it ticks both boxes there for you. I'm just wondering how it works, because you also want to give them information so that they can understand what's going on, and that must be particularly hard with something like humor to explain, because if you explain why something's funny, then it's not funny anymore sometimes, like, or if you need a lot more space, how does that work with I guess some things can be translated, but some things without knowing something about the culture or the language, or like if it's a wordplay or something that's specific to that language, how do you communicate humor to an audience for which it might not be funny because they don't speak that language?
Well, humor is very difficult to translate. It's very difficult to translate in general, let alone in subtitling, with all the time and space constraints that we have. So let's say you're watching a stand-up comedy show. There will be, for certain, a lot of puns, a lot of humor. And for example, in subtitling, you do not have space enough or time enough to explain the pun, mm-hmm. or the joke. We cannot explain. There are a lot of different strategies that we can use. We can use the exact same reference that the person is using, but then we risk that the viewer who is not familiar with the culture might not get it. It, which is a risk, but sometimes we need to take risks, right? Or you can maybe use different words and try to explain the pun or the joke, but you need to check if you have enough space and time to try to explain or to try to say it differently, which is not easy because, as I said, there's no time, there's no space to explain. Or you can change the pun or the joke completely and turn it into something that the target culture would be, could understand easily. That's another strategy. And sometimes subtitlers use it, but it also depends on the content. It depends on the audience also. It depends on so many things. So subtitlers must know that there are different strategies and they must be able to, when they get to the joke, they must be able to do a proper assessment of the joke, of the audience, of the content, of all the things that might have implications to that situation. And they have to decide which way is the best one. So there's no one size fits all solution when we are working with jokes.
I guess you have to be quite creative and you might not have a creative idea. And so,
yeah. I tend to say that subtitlers are really creative because we have to come up with solutions constantly. Mm. So we are trained to provide different solutions to a problem and then pick the most adequate solution. So we are used to that. We are creative. Subtitlers are creative people. And if you are not, if you do not feel creative, if you do not feel that a joke is not properly addressed, maybe you should move on, do something else, and then get back to it a couple of hours later or a day later, and then maybe you can come up with a better solution. So yes, subtitling is creativity all along. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And have you noticed any changes in the industry recently? Do you think things are changing, or is it are there new things that you're having to do now that you didn't have to do before, or are you seeing less of certain types of work?
Yes, things are changing in industry. Artificial intelligence is there, and some clients and also some professionals, but some clients ask us to use machine translation engines, which is a system that provides a translation based on other translations that were already created before. So it's similar to a memory usage, but it uses an algorithm that finds the most adequate solution for a certain sentence. Well, sometimes what the machine thinks is the most adequate solution is definitely not the most adequate solution. And that's why we cannot rely on machine translation without checking its output, without confirming, without revising, without making sure that that solution, that output, is the best one for that particular context. So this is very challenging because in subtitling, when we use machine translation, and when I talk about machine translation, I talk about, for example, Google Translator or DeepL, but there are these Google Translator or DeepL are free engines. There are more sophisticated engines that are paid, and sometimes clients and companies use those that are paid, which tend to be better. But even so, when we use machine translation, we need to, they are based in text inputs and text outputs, and they do not take in consideration the sound and the image, which are very important in audiovisual. And sometimes machine translation outputs are very poor because they are not considering everything that is involved. And this has changed the industry, and it has been changing the industry because it has been used more and more as a way of saving time and money. But it does not, most of the times it does not save time. Because we as professionals need to check and amend and sometimes redo the translation. So things are changing in that sense. Also, things are changing because more and more solutions based on technology are being offered to the audience. For example, there's automatic speech recognition, and that can be used to create captions which might be accurate or not. And from there you can also use automatic subtitling, but it is far from perfect right now. You can also use machine translation. What I want to say is that nowadays it is possible to create subtitles almost all automatically. The issue is that depending on what is the purpose of that content, it might be okay-ish, they might be bad. Either way, there should always be a quality control or a revision process, a proofreading process to make sure the content is okay, is the best possible content for that context, for that audience, for that type of film or that documentary. So technologies might help speed up, but sometimes the quality is below par. So quality needs to be two things need to be equated here. On the one hand, you have the availability of the content. Contents are being produced more and more quicker. On the one hand, there's the availability of the content, and on the other hand, there's the quality of the content. So people, I would say companies, but not only companies, I would say viewers, need to understand that sometimes contents are easily available, but their quality is not as good as it should. It is really important that viewers are made aware of how subtitles are done sometimes and what is the provenience of that content. Was it human created? Was it machine created? So so they could assess their quality and decide whether that content is useful or if that quality is the quality they expect, the quality they pay for. So there's a lot of issues around artificial intelligence that might be very difficult to grasp, but also very difficult to accept and difficult to move on from here. So there's a lot of uncertainty in this market, not only in subtitling, but in translation in general.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the main thing that affects our work nowadays.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation, so that people who are listening to this, and especially who are using subtitles as a language learning tool, can understand a bit more about the people who are creating them, a bit more about the work that you do, and how that is done, and how that isn't maybe as straightforward as they thought it was. Because I know that I've learned things about this process and industry since I've been spending more time with people who are actually doing it. So that's, I mean, it was useful for me, but it's also that I decided to share some of this information on the podcast as well. So where can people find out? Sorry?
No, I agree. This is not a straightforward process at all. Mm-hmm.
And if people want to get in touch with you, I'll add your links to the show notes page, but where's the best place? Do you spend most time on LinkedIn or...
Yes, you can reach me on LinkedIn. My address is RM Rita Menezes. Maybe I can share it with you afterwards, Kirsty. And that's the best way you can reach me on LinkedIn. Yes.
Yeah, I'll add the link when I publish our interview. I'll put the link in the text underneath it so that people can find you. Thank you for coming on the podcast today. It's been really good to get your input on this topic. It's the first time we've talked about it, so I'm trying to go into some areas that we haven't explored before, and you've helped us to do that. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about subtitling. It's great, and it's good that you are addressing subtitling also in a language learning podcast. So I congratulate you, Kirsty, for that.
You.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.